Hey, it's Tony Bruschi. If you love this podcast, be sure to check out one of our other podcasts, Real Ghost Stories Online, jam-packed with real ghost stories told by real people every single day of the week. Check it out. Search Real Ghost Stories Online. Press subscribe. Here's a preview portion of one of our bonus episodes for our premium subscribers, or we call them EPPs, extra podcast people, of Real Ghost Stories Online. Take a listen. Search Real Ghost Stories Online and press subscribe while you listen. Enjoy. It's EPP bonus episode number 415 of Real Ghost Stories Online. We're kind of doing it in the old school format this week. What should have been an adorable little bungalow for a young adult, nice little home, turned into a nightmarish memory that will haunt this individual for the rest of their lives.
Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is, and it's EPP bonus episode number 415. I know it sounds more like a normal episode, but it is the EPP stories, and this is kind of how we used to do our EPP episodes anyhow. But I'm formatting it this way because, honestly, time is my thing. We got some good stories here for you today. Tony and Todd with you on this EPP bonus episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. I'm going on a vacation later in the week, and I had put together these shows last week thinking I'll knock them all out and get them all scheduled. And here I am. I was working on some other stuff for True Crime Today. Also, I'm like, I don't think I did the EPP bonus episodes yet. And I didn't. So I'm like, oh, I'm on the deadline here. So I knew we were recording an episode tonight. So I'm like, we're going to make that the EPP bonus episode this week. So welcome to the EPP bonus episode. The formats, you know, usually we do it a little more laid back, kind of more like This American Life type style. But this is just, you know, it's the regular show. You all know it. But I got a really, really good long one here for us today and another one. But yeah, my mind's just going 100 miles an hour at the moment. We're flying. We got three connecting flights. We're leaving at literally 1:30 in the morning. Tomorrow, Wednesday morning, Tuesday night. Flight takes off at 6 a.m. And then it's there to Dallas, to Phoenix, to Kauai. And I don't know how I'm going to sleep or when I'm going to sleep or if I'm going to sleep. But I'm going to have some caffeinated beverages nearby and a lot of podcasts to listen to.
I'm hoping that there is an Elvis impersonator over there someplace singing Blue Hawaii when you get off the plane. That's all I want. And he walks up and throws a lay on you. That's what I want.
You know, it's funny because I didn't even think of that anymore, because Elvis was associated with Hawaii for so long. Is that even a thing anymore? Is that anything they think of? Is there Elvis impersonators? I think of Vegas with Elvis now, but
yeah, I mean, I think so. I think, you know, I think there's still a little bit of that over there. I'd be surprised if not. And now with the new movie out, there's kind of this resurgence of interest in him, and who knows?
If
nothing else, you should go dressed as Elvis and then you hand out the lays.
That'd be great. That'd be a really nice vacation to take with my girlfriend and her three children. Oh, there's Tony. As they've already gotten to know me pretty good over the last year, but all of a sudden I show up dressed as Elvis at 1:30 in the morning as we begin our car ride to the airport. I think there may be some people saying, I'm good. I'm not going to go to Hawaii. I think
Tony's got a side gig that he hasn't told us about till just now.
Like, they already know I do crazy things and like what I do for a living and all of the things that I have here on this amusement park of a farm. So they already know I'm a little eccentric, I guess, but I think that may be the thing that pushes it over the edge. Where even my girlfriend's like, would you mind just staying at the airport and giving us a ride back? So that's probably not a good idea. Have you seen the Elvis movie yet?
I haven't. did you see it?
I did.
Was it good?
It was. It was very good. What is your hesitation?
I want to see it, but I'm a hesitant because I don't want to see a bad performance. There's been so many Elvis movies done with actors who just messed it up. And I heard this guy is really good. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of some revelations that come out in this whole thing about why Elvis did what he did and all that kind of stuff. So I kind of want to see it, but also I kind of just want to keep my version of the King mm-hmm. as clean and pure as possible.
And Todd, for everyone playing along at home, is a big Elvis fan. You had like an Elvis clock in your office. You had Elvis stuff all the time. So I don't know a lot of the Elvis story per se, but and I always knew. Who's the guy? The Tom Hanks character, the
Colonel Tom.
The Colonel. Yeah. And I knew like the Colonel Tom was like some part of his story, and I knew it was his manager. But I guess I didn't know exactly how it was all put together, and it's really kind of creepy. I mean, it does not paint Elvis in a bad light. It really paints him more in the Colonel in a more nefarious light. But it's the story that has been going on and repeating itself in the music industry forever. It's the same thing of who's the guy to the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC, Lou or whatever his name was.
Yeah, yep.
Same sort of deal. Just taking advantage of young artists, spinning them in directions where, you know, he wants them to go for their own purposes, making them superstars in the process. But at the same point, you know, really kind of tearing people apart, tearing people up. You know, some survived and got along just fine. A lot of NSYNC and Backstreet are doing just fine. I mean, look at Britney Spears, though. Look at, you know, some other acts that sort of character has that sort of influence on. And you really kind of see it. It's an older story, but the movie really kind of makes it feel real. It makes it feel not just this legend or this story that happened a long time ago. It's like, oh, okay, I get it. This is the same sort of shit. It was just a different time. And the actor who does Elvis, very good. If you can get over the fact that he looks a little bit more like John Travolta playing Elvis right. than it being someone who's trying to look like Elvis. Because I swear to God, there's many scenes where it looks like Grease. and I'm like, God, he looks like John Travolta. But overall, it's a good movie. I think you'd like it. I don't think it does anything negative to the image of Elvis. I just think it shows you kind of the reality, the behind the scenes stuff of the music industry that a lot of people aren't aware of.
Look at this. I'm getting schooled on Elvis. Now, Tom Hanks in that particular role, and I don't want to take a lot of time for it, but was he good? Because I have a hard time with Tom sometimes because he's done so many different things. He played Mr. Rogers from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, who I'm also a big fan of.
I've not watched that one yet.
And I won't watch that either. And I just, does he seem like Tom Hanks just in a fat suit, or does he actually seem like a character?
It's hard with Tom Hanks because you know it's Tom Hanks. Every time he's on screen, you know it's Tom Hanks in a fat suit. But they made the makeup's really good. I would say, I mean, the accent, I don't know how the Colonel talked. So I'd have to listen to how the Colonel spoke. But to me, it almost seemed a little bit over the top on the accent. But maybe that's how the guy talked. I really just don't know the answer to that. Gotcha. But it's Tom Hanks at his creepiest, quite honestly. It's the creepiest Tom Hanks I've ever seen. In fact, one of my thoughts was when I was watching it was it'd be really fun to take this movie, dissect it into pieces, and make a trailer for Big Two. and just use like little clips of Tom Hanks from that movie and pretend it's the character from Big.
I love it because I always go back to when he was on Bosom Buddies and he's dressing as a woman and all that kind of stuff. That's when I think Tom Hanks, I always kind of go back that far.
Yeah, me too. It's hard to picture I haven't watched a lot of Tom Hanks movies in years, but it was good. If you're an Elvis fan, it was worth seeing. It really was. Okay, let's jump into our first story of the day here on EPP bonus episode 415 of Real Ghost Stories Online. Let's start here. It's a long one. So I'm going to premise this by saying that I'm an atheist lawyer raised by another atheist lawyer and his Wiccan priestess lawyer wife. Suffice to say, it was an interesting household. I was initiated into the craft at the age of 12, but never really practiced per se. I tagged along with my mother to the Samhain and Beltane festivals, the fall and spring celebrations celebrated in pagan religions. I definitely saw things during those festivals that I cannot explain. In terms of modern science, anyway. Mom always had a less scientific explanation and never seemed alarmed when these experiences occurred. It was just another part of the natural world for her, like a butterfly or a rainy day. This may be why I never thought my own experiences over the years were a big deal. That doesn't mean I wasn't scared. I just didn't find the experiences to be extraordinary. That coupled with my dad's staunch skepticism, which offered a healthy dose of self-doubt, I think made me think the experiences were either quite normal or never even happened. I have many of these experiences, but for purposes of this piece, I wanted to share my most recent. My husband and I had recently purchased our first house, an adorable little bungalow built in 1948 in the heart of our little artsy city. Our city's not terribly old, having first been established in the late 1800s. Not as old as cities of the Northeast, but it certainly has a history. None of it bad. Our town was established as a resort town, playground for the rich and famous. We'd host yacht races to Havana, Cuba in the 1930s and lay claim to two of the most luxurious old hotels in the state. These hotels are rumored to be haunted. As you can see, I'm a bit of a nerd when it comes to history. An interest I picked up from my dad. A smattering of interest in the paranormal was, of course, from my mom. Our town has mostly a happy, fun-loving history and has maintained that vibe to this day. I'd not suspect that in purchasing an older home, I'd be purchasing anything other than charm and loveliness. The home itself sits on a modest lot in a moderately old neighborhood. Most of the houses are built in the late 1940s through the 1970s. The original home was a two-bedroom, one-bath with a loft which sits over a one-car garage. However, over the years, various previous owners had added a rear dining area and larger master bedroom, along with a sunroom. It had several different finishes throughout. In the main house, the original hardwood floors remained, but the prior owners had replaced the flooring in the kitchen with cheaper, thinner hardwood that had begun to warp, an unfortunate decision. The rear addition was clad with tile, and the master had the same cheap hardwood as the kitchen. There were custom built-in cabinets in the rear addition and lots of windows. There were ceiling fans in every room, typical of a southern bungalow. And my favorite part of the house, and the part that sold me on it, was the loft over the garage. There was no attic above the loft, so the ceilings sloped with the roof. In fact, there was a door directly from the loft to the attic, just a regular door that you could open and walk right into the attic. In the attic, you could see the remnants of an old brick chimney a previous owner had cemented over and removed from the roof. Why? I don't know. Another unfortunate decision in my mind. The loft had a tiny closet in the back. We affectionately referred to it as the Harry Potter closet. The door to get into the closet was only about 3.5 feet tall. Inside were no shelving or anything that a regular closet should have. It was really just another room, long enough to fit a twin bed inside, but not tall enough. I used it as a reading room. In this loft, there was also what we called a loft loft. This was because this little room was essentially another little loft. The main loft sat exactly 6 stairs up above the main house. Once you reached the top of those stairs and looked to your immediate left, there was another set of stairs, only 4, up to another little room. This was my favorite place in the entire house. We painted the loft in dark purple and decorated it with lots of rugs, pillows, and carved wooden furniture. I wanted to make an air of magic, and I think we succeeded. In the loft loft, we stuffed an oversized beanbag, small flat-screen TV. The beanbag took up half the space and was a pain in the butt to hold up there. I'd retreat to the space when I was stressed and just sink into the beanbag and scroll through YouTube or read. I could close the door, cut myself off from everyone else in the house. It were just my husband, our black German Shepherd, who was 112 pounds worth of goofy lovableness, and our 2 cats, who were sisters. The room was dark and cool. The only window was the main loft and out of sight of the loft loft, so even in the middle of the day, the loft loft was quite dark. I'd also sneak up to the loft in the middle of the night if my husband was snoring too loud. Typically, I'd leave the door open to allow my cats to come in and hang out if it wasn't one of those days that I just needed alone time. Our cat Haley is very affectionate and needy at times. She loves to snuggle right on top of you. It's not common for her to respect your space. So on the days or nights I did not want my cat on my head or chest, I would close the door to the loft. One particular night, I want to say it was late summer, early fall. My husband's snoring woke me up at around 3 or 4 in the morning, so I grabbed a small blanket and made my way to the loft. The animals were all snoozing and paid me no mind as I walked softly to the loft. This time I closed the door. I didn't want to wake up to my cat on my head, drooling on my face. I snuggled into the beanbag, lying on my side with my back to the stairs and face to the wall, and pretty quickly fell asleep. Now, I'm a light sleeper. Noises, light, or touch wake me easily. I really only fall into deep sleep for only a few hours at night, or if I've partaken too much. I've never experienced night terrors or sleep paralysis. I'm usually a pretty peaceful sleeper. That night, though, I recalled having been snoozing for a couple hours when I felt my cat walking on the beanbag near my head. Darn it, I could have sworn I closed that door, I thought to myself as she settled in. I was too comfortable to move, and she was uncharacteristically respectful of my space. I just quietly lying next to my head, so I figured I'd let her stay. I enjoyed her company. She did not purr, though, which I thought was odd. She's usually a little motorboat when she hangs out with us. I was too tired and comfortable to think more on it and dozed off again. At some point, I awoke again. This time, I reached over to pet Haley, but she wasn't there. Huh, I thought to myself. She must have left while I was sleeping. I went back to sleep, this time not really falling asleep. I was in that deeply relaxed, half-asleep, half-awake state when I felt a presence. I told you I'm a light sleeper and very aware of stuff happening around me. Not a great trait to have when you're trying to sleep. Figured it was my husband checking on me. I very slightly cracked my eyes open. I didn't want to wake completely up because I didn't want him to feel bad for waking me. I also didn't want to fully wake up and interact with anyone because I was still tired and too comfy to move. When I cracked my eyes, I saw the silhouette of someone kneeling at the foot of the beanbag. I couldn't make out any facial features. It was too dark. But the head was angled in a way that it appeared to be the silhouette looking at me. Just sitting there, staring. I looked at it for what felt like a minute, and it didn't move. I was slightly creeped out, but figured it was just my husband trying to see whether I was actually there. Very small, and the room was very dark. I could understand how it may have taken him a bit to see if I was there. And he's always so quiet when he moves around the house and takes great care not to wake me up. Just one of his things. So the fact he did not touch me or call my name was not uncommon. I went back to sleep until the light of the day woke me. I stretched and gathered my blanket and made my way down the stairs to find the door completely closed. I opened it and walked downstairs expecting to find my husband on the couch, but he wasn't there. In fact, he was sound asleep in the master bedroom. The cats were snuggled up with each other, quietly watching me as I passed them. My dog gave a couple of lazy thumps of his tail and promptly fell back asleep. He must have checked on me a while ago and just went back to sleep, I reasoned. Later that morning, while we were eating breakfast, I asked my husband if he had come up to the loft to check on me. He looked up from his donut and cocked his head a little. No, he spoke. You didn't come up to take Haley, I asked again. No, I was in sleep until you woke me up asking what I wanted for breakfast this morning. Why? I could have sworn Haley came up. I saw you checking on me early this morning, I told him. He shrugged, continued eating, and that was the end of the conversation. Figured it must have been a dream. I often slipped into very realistic dreams when I'm half asleep, half awake. I had just never experienced touch. The slight depression of the beanbag while in that state, and I could have sworn my eyes were open and I was deliberately looking at something when I saw that figure. It was a deliberate action on my end, not a dream. Nevertheless, I didn't think more of it for the next few weeks. With work and other matters, it was easy to keep my mind off of it. I did not stay away from the loft either. Almost every day I'd spend time snuggled up in the beanbag reading or playing around on my phone. One weekend after a night out, we came home and crashed in the bedroom. My husband's snoring gets worse after he's been drinking, and that night he sounded like a chainsaw riding a motorcycle next to a freight train. Suffice to say, there was no way I was sleeping that night if I didn't leave the room. So I did my usual, grabbed a blanket and an extra pillow and quietly made my way to the loft. It was about 3 a.m. and the animals were all sound asleep. This time I made a mental note to fully close the door so Haley wouldn't get in. I climbed the 4 stairs to the loft and settled in again, laying on my side with my back to the entryway and face to the wall. There I slept for maybe an hour or two when I felt someone climbing on the beanbag just behind me. You know how it feels when someone sits on a mattress or cushion right next to you. You go slightly up, especially if you weigh less than that person. Well, that's what I felt. I was fully awake at that point. But I could not move. I could feel my heart beating harder and faster, and my eyes were wide open. I knew it was not my husband. He'd never do that. And even if he did, he'd reach over to touch me. This was just something sitting next to me, watching me. I tried to move, but couldn't. I couldn't move anything, not a finger, not my head, not even my lips. I was frozen. I also noted at this point that the room was colder than it usually is. The loft was already the coolest room in the house with its dark walls and its own AC unit, but this time it was frigid. I wanted to turn around to see so bad. Every fiber of my being wanted to move, but I couldn't. As I fought with myself to move, I could feel the beanbag going up and down almost like it was breathing, or like someone next to me was shifting positions. Finally, after what seemed like several minutes by sheer willpower, I was able to move my head just the slightest bit, enough to strain my eyes to peer over my shoulder, and at that moment, saw a gray hand reaching over my head. I screamed at it to go away, but what came out was nothing more than a muffled gurgle. I immediately shut my eyes, and at that moment, I could move again. It was about 5 a.m., and the morning light was just beginning to creep in. I realized that was around the same time I saw the dark figure several weeks ago. All right, right there. So we're going to pause this week's preview of our EPP bonus episode from Real Ghost Stories Online. If you want to hear the rest of it, become an extra podcast person, sign up at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Get access to all of the bonus episodes, all of them in their entirety, all commercial free. The advanced episodes, the bonus episodes, the archive, it's all there for you to binge away on at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening to Real Ghost Stories Online. Real Ghost Stories.